Yes, my co-host this morning is Richard Manson of Flying Elephant, and we are going through the pages of the book The Thinking Tank with the author Jay DeWilde. And not only is the book an interesting read, it's a piece of fiction, but because of the journey that Jay went on to achieve this and complete this book, a lot of emotional turmoil, trauma, loss and ill health. And against all those odds, she went on to fulfill a dream, which was to write a novel. And we're going through that story now with Jay. If you'd like to contribute, then please text in on 4001. Maybe you have a story of overcoming odds to achieve success, or in fact just to fulfill that personal goal, that dream. Let us know on 4001, or you can tweet at Suzanne Radford. So tell us what happened to Rowena, Jay. So you were living in Rutland, in England. It was Christmas 1998.
Yeah.
Were you all together?
We were together for Christmas, which was fantastic and a real blessing in retrospect. She was leaving on Boxing Day to go with her sister to Edinburgh to visit their dad, because their dad and I were divorced. I was going with my husband, Martin, to Texas to visit his son, also with Martin's daughter, Katie. So, in fact, the two of us, well, the four of us, as it were, we were being separated over the new year. So I went over to Texas. It was Daniel, Martin's son's wedding anniversary. We were celebrating that. Rowena went off with her dad to celebrate Hogmanay. And then on the 4th of January, I got a telephone call at 4 o'clock in the morning to say that Rowena was in a really bad way. It was her father on the phone saying that they didn't think she was going to make it. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I started trying to calm him down and saying, no, don't worry. She'll be fine. Everything will be all right, because you can't compute the possibility. She was perfectly healthy. Nothing wrong with her. So
she's never had any ill health.
No, I mean, she'd had a touch of asthma, but it was perfectly under control. She'd had the odd attack, but never anything major.
And she was 15 years old at this point.
Yeah, she was 15 years old at this point. Sam, actually, her father, thought she'd had an accident because she'd been found in the bathroom. So he thought that she'd hit her head, because she was bending over the bath. She had a goldfish. It was her pet, and she took it backwards and forwards from Edinburgh whenever she visited Sam. And he thought maybe she'd slipped and fallen, she'd screamed out. And in fact, her sister Rebecca found her on the floor in the bathroom. Sam and Rebecca both tried CPR. Edinburgh Royal Infirmary was only around the corner, so she had a really good crash team on site. They came, they took her to hospital, but actually 10 minutes after the telephone call, I got yet another telephone call to say that actually she had died. And at the time, Sam still thought that she'd had an accident. Mm-hmm. But it transpired, of course Rowena had to have a post-mortem, that it was actually sudden adult death syndrome. There had been nothing wrong with her. On post-mortem, there appeared to be nothing wrong with her. And they concluded that it would have been one of about 12 conditions that shows no sign at post-mortem, but is grouped together under this sudden adult death syndrome category. And I'd never heard of it before. Mm. But apparently about 11 young people die from it every week just in the UK alone.
Wow.
My gosh.
Yeah.
And there's no signs, there's no pre-signs. So, I mean, now, is there a check you can get for this, or is it still very much a sort of, illness that's not known about?
The thing about sudden adult death syndrome is that the first symptom very often is death.
Mm.
So if you don't know that you're looking for a problem, then why do you seek help? There is a charity called CRY, Cardiac Risk in the Young, which is promoting the idea of screening, as in ECG screening young people, because very often something will show up on an ECG, that there is an arrhythmia of the heart, that kind of thing, which can cause the heart to stop, which they think is what happened in Rowena's case. If you screen children, you may be able to pick up that this sort of thing could happen to them. And then, of course, they can have a pacemaker fitted. But in Rowena's case, she hadn't been screened. There was no reason to screen her. Nobody in the family had the problem, because it can actually be hereditary.
Right.
And we were all screened after her death to make sure that we didn't have some kind of syndrome ourselves. There is guilt, of course, because you think to yourself, maybe there was this tiny sign, maybe some small thing could have been picked up. Maybe I should have taken her to the doctor just to have had an ECG anyway. But it is one of those things that you just can't really do anything about.
For a mother sort of being the other side of the Atlantic when this had happened, must have compounded the trauma even more. You had to face that flight and get yourself back to the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a terrible cliche that to be honest, I got fed up with in the end. It was, you know, this is a parent's worst nightmare. Everybody said that to me. And yes, of course it is. Getting on an aeroplane, having the journey, we had to fly from Houston to Gatwick, from Gatwick, a taxi to Heathrow, from Heathrow, the shuttle up to Edinburgh. And all that journey, I kept thinking, this is some stupid mistake. They've got the wrong child. This can't possibly be happening to me. The cabin crew were amazing with me, because obviously I was sobbing the whole way. I didn't know where to put myself, didn't know what to think. Difficult to eat, difficult to drink, difficult to think. And when I got there and saw Rebecca and Sam standing at the gate waiting for us, I think it probably hit me for the first time that this isn't a mistake. This has really happened, and this is something that is going to stay with me for the rest of my life and with Rebecca. And
how did you feel for the fact that you weren't there? I mean, you know, in these situations, you will seek and look for all the reasons. Why did this happen? And then, as you said, you know, could we have done anything? And then as a mother, when the fact that her father and her sister were there, but you weren't able to be there, how did you feel about that?
I felt completely and utterly destroyed by it, because however much you try and tell yourself logically that you couldn't have done anything about it, there is this feeling, and it will never go away, that maybe if I had been there, maybe, you know, somehow a mother's love would have given me the strength to be able to do something to bring her back to life. Maybe my CPR would have worked, you know, maybe there would have been something. And also the guilt of thinking, how could I possibly have been asleep thousands and thousands of miles away and not known that my daughter was dying? You know, that to me, it's impossible, because you know, you feel you must somehow have a connection that straddles all those miles and somehow should make you aware of what was happening. But no. And that's been really very difficult to take on board. It's probably something I'll never actually come to terms with. That's very difficult vocabulary, because something like this, I'm not sure that you do come to terms with it. And in fact, I chucked all that kind of vocabulary out of the window. It's more like finding a new normal,
right?
Rather than getting over, coming to terms with all that sort of thing. Guilty, dreadful, bad.
So did you get to see her? Did you see her? Yeah.
Yes, we went immediately to the hospital, and we all went to see her in the Chapel of Rest at the hospital. I know this sounds ridiculous, but I found it very, very difficult to connect with the moment, because my ex-husband was there with his girlfriend, a lot of people around, and it wasn't very personal. So we went back to Sam's flat, and then I said, look, I just need to go and see her without anybody else around. So Martin took me back to see her, and there was a most amazing nurse there. She was so sensitive. I know obviously they've been trained for this kind of thing, but the sensitivity was amazing. And Rowena seemed much more peaceful when I was with her on my own, and she was lying there, and she had kind of goldenish blonde hair. And it was around her head, and this sounds, again, a bit of a cliche, but, you know, she looked like an angel. It was like a halo around her. And the nurse gave me a brush and said, would you like to brush her hair? And at the time, it seemed the most natural thing to do, and I did that, and she gave me a lock of her hair. And now I think I owe a lot to that nurse, because this lock of Rowena's hair, which I actually have in a pendant round my neck, this lock of Rowena's hair is the only living thing I still have of her. Mm. And it's something, you know, that is actually her, and I owe it to that nurse. But seeing her there, she felt peaceful. I can't describe it any other way. It was peaceful, it was tranquil. There was a calm about it, even despite all the emotions that were raging inside of me. There was that moment of calm.
And again, this is where the sort of spirituality, if you like, or the coincidences, if you like, come in. But I read in your notes in preparation for today that she was wearing the red sweater, which was the last gift you gave her for Christmas. And that at the time, I think, comforted you in the fact that she was there with the last sort of gift from you.
Yeah, we'd gone out to Miss Selfridge before Christmas, and we'd chosen some clothes that she wanted, which she obviously took with her to wear for her new year. And yeah, there she was with this red sweater, which I thought suited her fantastically. And I still have the sweater. It's still a great comfort to me to have that. I know this sounds maybe weird, but it still smells of her to me. You know, there is still that smell lingering even all these years on, that you know, I can bury my face in it, and there is Rowena.
And you can feel close to her again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, I do feel she never leaves me. You talked about spirituality, Richard, and yes, I have a real belief that she is still here with me, that she helps guide me. I was very reticent about telling my backstory for a long time, and then I was persuaded that it might actually do some good. And the first time I did, I was very nervous, and then got some amazing comments, which to me was fantastic. And when we talked about me coming here today, and discovered that we had all this in common, the fact that you come from the village where Rowena's buried in the churchyard, I just felt, okay, we called her Weenie. Okay, Weenie.
This feels right.
This feels right. Thank you, Weenie. You're just letting me know that it's okay to let go. It's okay to speak to this nice lady, Suzanne.
Well, look, I appreciate you joining us and sharing your story. And the reason for sharing the story is for us all to, you know, relate to in some way, and to appreciate and where we are in our lives now, and what we can learn, if there's anything we can learn from loss and grief and pain, and how we can apply it to ourselves individually, and move through our life. And when we come back, Jay, we will move through your life, if that's okay, and see how you recovered from this.
Sure.
And how you moved on with your life, if that's possible.